And we return. It is today's Topical Currents Thursday edition. Joseph Cooper with Bonnie Berman, and both of us urge you to financially support the regional and local programming heard on the station. It's what makes WLRN have a unique South Florida flavor. Give us a call at 1-800-247-9576. I'm sorry, 1-866-247-9576. Or make an easy pledge at WLRN Radio. Speaking of South Florida flavor, we have Cordon Bleu chef, prolific author, and syndicated columnist Linda Gassenheimer with us. Linda, we have a guest who's certainly well-versed in cooking, comedy, and also has strong public radio ties.
Yes, he does. I'm not so sure about the cooking and the well-versed part. However, we hear him on NPR's Wait, Don't Tell Me. We see him on CBS Sunday Morning, but we didn't expect to see him on the Cooking Channel. He's Mo Rocca, and his cooking show is My Grandmother's Ravioli. Our favorite wine guy, Fred Tasker, he's joining us. And Fred gives the wine suggestions for my Dinner in Minutes column. You can also read Fred's wine column in the Miami Herald. Fred, are we drinking today?
Absolutely. Mo always talks about his grandmother's ravioli, so I thought I'd talk about my grandmother's Sauvignon Blanc.
Well, not Morgan David?
No, not Morgan David.
Did she make it herself, Mo wants to know?
Oh, absolutely.
Like Lucille Ball stomping around.
Well, that would be interesting in Michigan.
I can't hear Mo.
Oh, you can't?
Is that a problem? No.
Oh, okay.
Now you can.
Now you can.
Oh, okay. Oh, hi, Mo. Yeah.
All right, we're all together. That's great. Mo Rocca, Wait, Don't Tell Me, CBS This Morning. Great programs, but not a lot of food. So how did you turn to a cooking show?
Might be interesting for an audience to watch me try to learn. And cooking was a big gap for me. And I managed to get to my mid-40s and really not know how to cook at all. And it's actually something I'm just embarrassed about. I'm a cliche, you know, a New Yorker living in an apartment where my oven is used to store sweaters. And and I did have this terrific grandmother. I had two great, wonderful grandmothers. But the one I grew up with and spent more time with made these wonderful Sunday dinners, and they're a great memory for me. And I thought, you know, what's the next best thing to learning from my own grandmother how to cook? It would be learning from everybody else's grandparents how to cook. And so that's really what I set out to do. It's not a terribly original idea, but I'm happy that it seems to have worked. I mean,
it must have worked very well because congratulations. I understand that Parade Magazine voted it. My Grandmother's Ravioli is one of the top cooking shows.
Isn't that funny? Yeah, it's been a joy. I mean, and honestly, it's been a joy to do a non-scripted, I guess you'd call it a reality show, that features people that I'd actually want to be related to. I think so much of reality TV is, you know, about kind of freaks and awful people, and you know, hopefully we've been able to do a show with really kind of nice, decent people with good stories to tell, and they're doing that while they teach me how to cook.
How do you find them? How do you find these grandmothers?
You know, it's the best ones, the candidates seem to be volunteered, maybe even against their will, by their own kids or grandkids. You know, I have found that people who don't want to be on TV are generally better at being on TV than those people who desperately need to be on TV like me, which is really frustrating.
You really charm those grandmothers. I bet you could get adopted about twice a week.
I've been legally adopted. I have, at this point, 28 different grandparents or legal guardians. No, and they all think I'm too thin. And there is an interesting thing that happens, not with grandfathers. We do feature grandfathers and grandmothers and certainly couples, but something happens with grandmothers that once you become a grandmother, you either are given a handbook that says you must disapprove of any facial hair on men, especially men below, you know, under the age of 50. Every grandmother, because I recently grew a beard, is just horrified by that. So I'm going to have to get clean shaven for season 3.
Well, now, So the concept is that you go to these people's homes and they cook their favorite dish and all. But I think it's not just about the food they're making. It seems to be an introduction to the culture and the stories. Tell us a little bit about that.
Yeah, I mean, I didn't, you know, it would be awfully precious for me to say that it's, you know, all the stories behind the recipes. Sometimes it is. Sometimes it's just, I learned Maharashtrian cooking from two wonderful Indian grandmothers, best friends.
Sorry, what kind of cooking was it?
Maharashtrian, because they're Indian, but they're from the Mumbai region, and they taught me, among other things, that Indian food in the United States, that what we think of as Indian food is generally Punjabi cuisine. For whatever reason, the Punjabis who came over to this country started restaurants. People from their part of India tended not to start restaurants, so their cuisine is very different. And so they were, you know, they taught me, it was wonderful what they taught me. I'm trying to remember
You really learned well, huh?
cauliflower and peas curry, which was wonderful. It was a lot lighter than kind of like a chicken tikka masala, a lot of the thicker sort of Punjabi sauces. What was the other thing that we learned? That was season one, so I'm having trouble remembering. Let me get back to you on that one. But anyway, in the kitchen while we were learning, we got into a discussion about arranged marriages because each of them, as brides, had been given a masala daba, which is a spice box that traditionally is given to Indian brides. And then we somehow, you know, using these spices led to a discussion of the upside to arranged marriages, which is obviously counterintuitive, but that's sort of the heart of the show, is the kinds of topics and talks that come up in the kitchen when you're cooking with, especially with grandparents.
Are you actually cooking any of these recipes to impress your friends?
Yeah, I'm the sous chef, lackey, gopher, slave, whatever you want to call me. So they put me to work, and they get annoyed when I ask about measurements because grandparents don't measure. They don't. Even when they bake, they don't measure. I mean, you know, it's Peggy, my Irish grandmother, when she made scones, she said she relied on the Lord for them to come out well. And so there was no measuring.
Well, so actually, it's kind of some voices from the past that are bringing forward old recipes that perhaps become more popular today, do you think?
Say that again. I'm sorry.
Well, you're talking to grandparents. You're talking probably about the favorite recipes that they made, maybe their families made. And these may be recipes that are lost because as the younger generation doesn't cook or they don't pay attention. So maybe we're bringing these forward.
Yeah, absolutely. And because, you know, look, I mean, this is not what I set out to do, but the show, I think, is doing a service, certainly for these families, for the younger generations who want some sort of document of their own grandparents and their recipes. And one of the funny things is because a lot of these grandparents have been doing these recipes for so long, making them, they actually have a hard time explaining how to make it. They're not used to having another person there. And that actually can end up being very funny, you know, especially when I ask, like, how much of this are you putting in? And then they're usually irritated by that.
Right.
But then they work through it.
We're going to have to go to a quick break here. I'm Linda Gassenheimer. My guest is TV and radio and celebrity Mo Rocca. We'll take a short break, and we'll be back with more.
And welcome back to today's Topical Currents. We want to thank all of you who have made your contribution. And as a special incentive to make your contribution, it's Food and Dining, and it's Joseph Cooper, Linda Gassenheimer, Fred Tasker, and special guest Mo Rocca. And how about this, Mo? For everybody who donates during this segment, you can put your voice on their answering machine.
Well, they have to donate like a real amount of money.
Okay.
They can't.
Okay.
All right. So you're going to figure out how much you're worth, Mo Rocca?
Right.
Yes, exactly. You guys decide.
Okay. Well, as Bonnie said, I'm Linda Gassenheimer, and we're talking with TV and radio celebrity Mo Rocca. We hear him on NPR's Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me. We see him on CBS Sunday Morning, and we didn't expect to see him in a cooking channel, but his show is very popular. It's My Grandmother's Ravioli. And so,
well, Linda, yes? I remembered what Mina and Mona, my Indian grandmothers, taught me. They also taught me how to make lamb keema and cucumber raita, which is like this cool yogurt.
Raita, yes?
Okay, sure. Say raita. I say raita, you say raita.
Okay, cool. We're fine with that. But it does sound delicious. And so I want to know, though, but, you know, you mentioned at the beginning of the show that you have... you know, live in an apartment in New York City, and you have sweaters in your stove, and you probably can send out for any kind of food that you want. Have you started cooking now that you've been learning from these grandmothers?
You know, I wish I could say that I have, but I haven't. Partly it's that I want the show to go on forever, so I'm afraid that if I actually start learning how to cook, then the series will run its course too quickly. So I aspire to be the Bart Simpson of cooking. You know how Bart Simpson has remained 10 years old for 25 years? I'm going to remain at this level. But the other reason is because once you make Pflaumenkuchen and Rouladen with an amazing German grandmother, you know, or you make a duck curry with a terrific Thai grandmother like I did, it's a letdown doing it without them around. So if they can't come over and help me in my apartment, then I'm just going to keep ordering in.
Well, that's a good excuse.
It's also honest. I mean, like, believe me, when I was getting ready to promote the second season, I thought I shared these tales about how I was making my own pasta, but come on.
You're not doing it. Well, you're very busy, I must say, anyway. So what were some of the most popular recipes that the audience has really loved?
Well, Ruth taught me classic Jewish cuisine, and we learned how to make kreplach and say it. And for our kreplach, we only use chuck. We don't use fancy brisket because chuck is tastier and fattier. I really liked making fried green tomatoes with Gaetano, who was a 93-year-old hunter. He was really he was terrific. And then he also we made veal medallions with him. I'm trying to think who else. Oh, I made bread with Sonny up in Vermont with my Seventh-day Adventist grandfather,
So you travel to all of these kitchens and take the crew with you and get...
Yeah, it's great, yeah. And then Freddie and Eileen, they're just big drinkers down in North Carolina, so I learned how to make a sidecar with them.
I was waiting to hear about your grandmother's drinks. That sounds great.
What's a sidecar?
Oh, a sidecar. It has sugar on the rim. It's the wine man knows. Pete, right? Is it?
No, it's Fred. Fred Tasker.
Fred.
Fred, what's a sidecar? I don't know from sidecars.
Well,
we'll have to look it up.
I can't believe this. So, Mo, you didn't learn too much, huh?
I think I might have drank too much during that episode.
Okay.
And then Miyoko, my Japanese grandmother, taught me to make mackerel shioyaki. She was really down on teriyaki, so we did shioyaki. And
can you tell us what shioyaki? How do you say it?
I think it involves something. Oh, it involves salt. It involves salt, and it's grilling. You grill it. Yeah, I forgot. I'd have to look at the episode again. And then
you're a real fountain of information.
Does it involve soy sauce?
I mean, it's Japanese. It's got to. But listen, I may not know how to make these things, but I say them really well. So then, and I can also tell you what my Polish grandmother Mary told me, is that that pierogi is plural. The singular of pierogi is a pierogue.
Oh. Okay. And do you want to tell us what a pierogi is? Or what a pierogi
is? Dumpling. It's a dumpling. Look, the three things that I've really learned in this whole, four things I've learned in this whole series, is that everyone, like grandparents, love garlic. Grandparents don't measure. And every grandparent has a different way of getting lemon juice out of a lemon. Like Ginevra, my WASP grandmother, just put it in the microwave for a touch. Mina and Mona, my Indian grandmothers, did like a massaged the lemon, rolled it around to get it out of it. And then Lita, my Costa Rican grandmother, used this torture device. This thing was like, it was crazy to get the juice out of it. And then the last thing I've learned is that the world is basically one big dumpling. Like, there is, like, every culture has a different version of a dumpling.
Right. Oh, that's and pierogi. Good to hear.
Yeah, I love dumplings. So,
okay, I looked up Sidecar. It's a classic cocktail made with cognac, orange liqueur, and lemon juice.
Oh, that's pretty good.
Sounds good.
Yeah.
All right, so you're redeemed a little bit. You also had a program that's on sometimes now called Foodography.
Uh-huh.
And is that the show where you talked about some funky trends?
Well, it's a show that really, like, talks about the history and innovations in food. They're all single-subject episodes. I look great in it, but I'm really just the guy, the host, who's throwing to the story. So I'm the face of it. Like, when it starts, I'll be like, "Hi, I'm Maraca, and we're talking about pork today. Here's more information about pork." And then there'll be, like, a report about pork.
Okay. Well, now, wait, don't tell me. I mean, that's we air that here every Saturday morning on WLRN. And tell us a little bit about what goes on behind the scenes there.
I will, but I feel like I'm hogging the conversation. I feel bad because Fred, like, called in, and, you know, I just feel like he's probably with a bottle right now, just drinking himself into depression.
Well, he didn't need
questions.
I'm not sure I'll be able to talk for much longer.
Mo, just feel sorry for Fred because he happens to be in Michigan, and he loves the cold weather and the snow and the ice, and we're never going to ask him his weather forecast, okay?
And I actually, if Fred, I will just jump up and down if Fred tells me he's in the Upper Peninsula, because I'm a huge fan of pasties.
Oh, I'm in near Traverse City, and we have major pasties around here.
Okay,
we have restaurants that do nothing but pasties.
Do you have, like, a Michigander grandmother? Actually, for season 3, we're probably coming to Detroit, because there is I shouldn't be saying this now, but there is an amazing Armenian grandmother. I hope she's got a dumpling.
Is that pasties or pasties?
No,
we don't have pasties here. We're a clean-cut community.
I was just about to ask him to explain it.
Pasties are Finnish empanadas, basically, for a Miami audience.
They have them in England as well. They're just, as he said, the whole world is a dumpling.
I actually have something very interesting to say about that, which is that when the miners came over, like people like Croats and people who do mining, came over to the United States, so like Michigan, they would go into their mines with these like hot pockets, these little meat pockety things, and then they'd put them on their shovels over a flame deep in the mine to heat it up, and that's a pasty.
Yeah, they could eat it with their dirty hands from all the mining residue because they had the edge around it of crust. You would hold on to that, and then you wouldn't eat that part.
Hmm. Yeah, they're high in iron. Anyway, so...
toxically high.
Wait, Don't Tell Me. It's a wonderful and charming show, which is sort of reminiscent of a 1950s quiz show. And I don't know what to say. People really love it.
I wanted to find out if you've always been sort of off-the-cuff funny. Is this just part of your life? Or do you have to work at it?
You know, sometimes when I'm in the shower, I'll be thinking of things to say that day. This is usually happening in the morning. So I think a lot, like the stuff that I'll say on Wait, Don't Tell Me that lands is stuff that's spontaneous or has maybe been kind of like lurking in the back of my brain somewhere. I think the one thing is, and all the panelists would agree, if you try to write down a joke and think, ooh, this joke will kill, and you go in and you deliver it on Wait, Don't Tell Me, the audience doesn't laugh, even if it's the best joke in the world, and the audience may not realize why they're not laughing, but subconsciously they can tell that it wasn't a spontaneous
That it's scripted.
Spontaneous.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, we're going to take
Sorry,
Mo. We're going to come back to this. We're going to have to take a short break here. I'm Linda Gassenheimer. My guest today is TV and radio celebrity Mo Rocca. We'll take a short break, and we'll be back with more.
Welcome back to Food and Dining on today's Topical Currents. Bonnie Berman, Joseph Cooper, Linda Gassenheimer, Fred Tasker, and special guest Mo Rocca. We want to thank you for making your pledges of support.
We need
do
your support.
Appreciate
we need
them.
Your support.
We do need them. The number, again, is 1-866-247-9576, or you can always make your pledge online at WLRNradio.org.
All right. Well, as I mentioned before, my guest is, and Bonnie has mentioned, Mo Rocca. You hear him on Wait, Don't Tell Me, right here on WLRN on Saturday mornings.
11 o'clock.
11 o'clock, right. You see him at CBS Sunday Morning with Charles Osgood, but you also see him on the Cooking Channel, and his cooking show is My Grandmother's Ravioli, and he's been making us laugh, as he does on Wait, Don't Tell Me, and everywhere else. But now it's Dinner in Minutes time. And today it's a barbecued pork and beans. And Mo Rocca, I picked this recipe because I think even you could make it in your New York City apartment.
Great.
These barbecue flavors you can have without heating up your grill. We love to barbecue. Midweek, who's got time to marinate the meat, heat up the grill? You may not even have access to the outside. So this is a 15-minute
Well, Linda, you're a grandmother. Maybe you can get Mo to come and interview you.
Right. Okay.
Maybe
good.
Maybe you shouldn't be telling secrets, Fred.
Yes, you're divulging some private information, Fred.
Well, it is amazing that she's only 27 years old.
Exactly.
Oh my God, she's like Loretta Lynn.
Okay, let's go back to barbecued pork that I'm teaching Mo how to make. Okay.
Okay.
The pork is broiled, and my secret to making it quick and easy is that I line a baking tray with foil. And I stick it in the oven as the broiler's preheating. So the tray gets hot. When you put the pork on it, you've already got some heat cooking from the bottom, from the hot tray. I also cut a pork tenderloin in half lengthwise, but not all the way in half, just partly, and open it like a book so it's thinner and it cooks faster. So what I do is I put some barbecue sauce on it. And by the way, you can find barbecue sauce today that is low in salt and low in sugar. And it actually does taste good because Joe's looking at me like, what could it possibly taste like without that in it? But you can try it and see. Anyway, you spread some barbecue sauce over. You cook it for about 5 minutes under the broiler. Turn it over, put some more sauce on it, another 3 minutes, and you're done. And while you're doing that, you open up a can of beans. You rinse them under the water in a sieve and put it in a pot with some more barbecue sauce and just warm them through. Open up a bag of salad, have some lettuce and maybe sliced tomatoes on it, and you're all set. That's your 15-minute barbecued pork and beans. And you can get that recipe and the photo. It's at dinnerinminutes.com. And please, you can also follow me on Twitter. That's at L. Gassenheimer. Fred, are you still drinking up there?
I'm always drinking.
Yeah, we knew that.
That's what I'm for.
Okay.
Actually, we've been hearing all this great stuff about good food, and I want to talk now about Americans' love affair with wine and see what Mo thinks about it. Actually, Americans are going up in wine sipping while a lot of the rest of the world is going down. In Europe, for example,
what
France,
do you mean
Italy,
going down?
I'm sorry?
They're going down in how much they're drinking?
Consumption.
Yeah,
they're
drinking less
okay.
wine.
All right.
And it's the people that we always look to for our wine. It's France, Italy, and Spain, those cultured Europeans, and their wine consumption is actually decreasing because they're drinking more beer and more sugary colas. Here in the United States, we increased our wine consumption by 1.5% last year, and it was the 19th straight year that we did it. So there
Fred,
was a Nielsen survey.
Mo has a question.
Fred, I need to interrupt you.
Yeah.
You're always on this show. So listen, I have to ask you. I went on Rachel Ray's show, and at the end, she gave me this really nice bottle of wine on the air. I haven't opened it yet because I haven't had anyone in my apartment that I like enough to warrant like a network kind of wine on the air. This is a really great bottle kind of thing. So it's Casanova de Dineri, 2003. Brunello di Montalcino. And this thing's worth a lot, I think. She made a big deal on the air. She was like, this bottle of wine is awesome, and I'm giving it to you because I love you.
That's probably kind of expensive, and it's kind of a Chianti on
How
steroids.
Much?
And if you open that up...
He wants to know the price, Fred. He's going to put it on eBay.
I don't know exactly, but it could be in the $40, $50 range very easily. But what you want to do is open that up and get a good big steak and toss it on the grill, and that you would have an absolutely marvelous feast that way.
Right,
you
Fred,
don't want to sell
question.
It. It's no fun.
Fred, I've begun drinking a lot of pork. I love pork. I love to drink, and I'm like my goal is to just start drinking a lot of it. But somebody told me that if you just keep the bottle upright for a long time, then it kind of loses its good taste. That you got to keep it sort of on its side and roll it over every once in a while. That it gets, does it get bed sores or something? What's the deal?
Yeah, actually, it kind of does. If what the whole idea is, you put it on its side so the cork stays wet. If the cork, if it's vertical for 10 years, the cork dries out and deteriorates, and then it can spoil the wine. So, but if you
okay,
like
Fred,
pork, you'll like
question.
Brunello.
And I go into a restaurant and I say I want a martini straight up with a lemon twist, which is what my father always ordered. Are they more likely to assume it's vodka or gin?
Well, I would assume it's gin, but that's just me. I think vodka is way overdone, and I'd rather have gin in a martini.
Now, if I do get a vodka martini, a little bit, wait, what's the thing when you have to put a little olive juice in it? A little bit dirty. I like it a little bit dirty. I don't like it really dirty, but a little bit dirty with three olives, which is something I've been ordering recently. I forgot the question. Wait, sometimes the bartender goes, okay, and you'll want some vermouth in that, right? And I don't know what to say.
Say very, very little. Vermouth is sort of a contaminant in a good martini. Although you don't want to go without it because then you're just drinking gin.
So. Well, you could just sort of do what they do in England is just sort of blow it over. Just blow a little vermouth through it.
In my wine cabinet, I have an atomizer that I put the vermouth in and you just kind of give it a spritz over the top of the glass.
Exactly.
So basically, if I'm doing a vodka martini with my three olives and slightly dirty, you think that I should ask for just a spritz of vermouth?
Actually, if you have all that olive juice in it, it doesn't make much difference. You won't taste the vermouth anyway. But they call it a dirty martini because the olive juice makes it look dirty. It's kind of a disgusting thing to look at, but it tastes really good.
It does taste really good. So let me ask you this. If I'm going to go out tonight and I'm going to eat a hanger steak at the place I go to, it's sort of my main hangout, two blocks away. Is it too much if I start with my with my vodka martini, slightly dirty with three olives, and then during the meal I'll have a Cote de Rhone, a glass of red wine, and then afterwards I'll have a glass of port. Is that too much?
Are you walking home?
Yeah, I guess only you can answer that. It depends on how you feel the next morning, and as they say, whether you're driving.
Well, I've always been a fan of Ray Milland and The Lost Weekend,
It sounds like you're going to have... So Fred, what else about your survey? Tell us.
Oh, the Nielsen survey was talking about which wines we Americans like, and we know what we like. Here's what we were drinking these days. 21% of the wine we drink is Chardonnay, 12% is Cabernet Sauvignon, 9% is Merlot, 8% is Pinot Grigio, 6% is Moscato for people who like sweet wines. And here's something new. 5% is sweet red wine, even though the real sophisticates do not approve of that. I wrote a favorable review of a sweet red wine a little while ago, and I got all these emails from people thanking me for giving them intellectual cover to drink what they really like rather than what they're supposed to.
What is a sweet red wine?
Oh, it could be a Mavrodafne from Greece, or up here in Michigan, they make a lot of sweet red wines because the grapes don't get very ripe here, so they leave a little extra sugar in it, and people get very used to it, and they like it that way.
Well, I have something to say to Fred before we get cut off.
Yes.
Which is Fred.
Which is soon.
I have a business project that I want you to come in on. I'm starting a Chilean wine bar, and it's going to be called Pinochet.
On that note, it's been a really fun week with Mo Rocca. Mo Rocca, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you. It's been great. I'll talk to you guys soon. Fred, I'll see you in Michigan.
Okay. Come on.
Bye-bye, Mo.
My grandmother's ravioli is on the Cooking Channel. Listen to him on Wait, Don't Tell Me, Saturday mornings, right here on WLRN. I'm Linda Gassenheimer, and please join me next week or next Thursday on Food News and Views.
And thanks for listening. Thanks for making those pledges. We certainly appreciate your support of regional and local programs on the station. Technical direction by online producer Paul Leary and Michael Stock. That number again, 1-866-247-9576, or pledge online at wlrnradio.org. Tomorrow at 1, it's Ed Bell and the South Florida Arts Beat. And again, please support the regional and local programs on WLRN. And now, an all-pop music calendar for March 20th. On this day in 1965, 49 years ago, Motown artists arrived for their first British tour. Get this, Martha Reeves and the Vandellas, Stevie Wonder, the Supremes, and the Temptations. Also, on this day in 1969, 45 years ago, Beatle John Lennon marries artist Yoko Ono in Gibraltar. Their honeymoon included an Amsterdam bed-in. Christ, you know it ain't easy. And one more while we turn the beat around. On this day in 1990, 24 years ago, South Florida's pop star Gloria Estefan suffers a broken back and is in critical condition after a traffic accident near Scranton, Pennsylvania. She takes a year to recover. (866) 247-9576, that's the magic number. So we leave with a thought from Miami's Gloria Estefan, whose father was a bodyguard for Batista. Then he was held political prisoner in Cuba. Quote, having felt people's love and support firsthand through difficult moments in my life makes me feel it's our responsibility to help one another. So help us out. Joseph Cooper with Bonnie Berman. Stay tuned for Here and Now next from NPR News.